Hello, everybody. Welcome back into Locked On Suns, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Today, as I'm your host, Evan Sedger. I'm joined by co-host Brendan Clean. You can follow me on Twitter at eSedger. You can follow Brendan on Twitter at BrendanClean14. You can also follow our Locked On Suns Twitter page, Ray, at Locked On PHX Suns. Your support over there is very much appreciated, as always. We're joining us today live from Talk Stars Arena for the final time during preseason action. We'll be back again here next week on next Wednesday when the Suns open the season against the Sacramento Kings. But final test run, so to say, for Phoenix Suns tonight. They fell in a closely contested loss, 107-102 to Denver Nuggets, even though it really wasn't that close on the scoreboard. There was kind of a late run by Ele Okobo there in the last few minutes by himself, which is kind of impressive. But what did you take away from tonight's game and really throughout this preseason?
Yeah, I mean, it almost feels crazy to ignore the last one too, which maybe we can kind of do both at the same time, because that 24 threes was where my head was coming from going into this game. Just the offensive barrage that the team put together against Portland. And so very different flow of the game today. As Monty Williams noted in his post-game press conference, just missing shots early and kind of got behind and weren't able to come back, which is what's going to happen to you against a great team like the Nuggets. But I guess just kind of a tale of two games here where they – well, I guess it's really a tale of three games, because the Kings game was pretty awful. And then they really followed it up nicely on Saturday. And then today was kind of, I guess, a combination of the two, where they didn't fall flat, but they weren't able to get that offense going like they did against the Trailblazers.
From what I wrote this in my recap story, but also I feel like every team nowadays is like this, so I just want to get your thoughts on this. But this year's Suns team feels like it's going to live and die by the three, because you see tonight, 9 of 32, 28%. Until that late run, like I mentioned at the top of the show with the Kobo, this game was like a 10-15 point game throughout the entire second half. Do you feel like not only this Suns team, but really the whole NBA nowadays, I mean, we're about to enter 2020. If you're good from three, you're usually going to win. If you're bad from three, you're usually going to lose.
Yeah, well, I think that star talent, shot like elite-level shot creators for themselves and for other players can combat that. And I think part of the reason that the Suns have been so destined to do whatever their three-point percentage dictates is that their two star shot creators, if you even can call DeAndre Ayton that at this point, he's not really much of a creator, haven't really lived up to the bill. Devin Booker really hasn't been incredibly involved offensively outside of, you know, maybe a quarter here and there. And then DeAndre Ayton, mostly just a finisher. So again, a guy who is really benefiting from the spacing you're talking about. So pretty much the same kind of concept that when the threes are going in, there's more space for him to finish. When it's not happening, not so much. So I think if Booker or Ayton, or on some nights, maybe even Rubio, potentially Kelly Oubre, like if those guys can create shots themselves, maybe that doesn't put so much pressure on shooting. But that's definitely been the story of the preseason.
Yeah, none of those stars actually made a three tonight, which kind of surprised me. Oubre 0 of 4, Bridges 0 of 3, Ayton once again did not take a three tonight. Booker as well only took one, and Rubio only two. And you brought Booker there for a second. I'm glad you brought that, because I wanted to hit on what Monty Williams said post-game about Booker, and it seems like by design he has been getting involved. It's more of like a decoy sort of thing.
Yeah, it was interesting to hear him say that. I kind of wish that he would have elaborated more. I think it was just he basically, I not verbatim by any means, but kind of said something to the effect of they wanted to establish their playing style broadly before funneling it specifically to Booker. So I guess that makes sense, and we did see a lot of that. You know, Ricky Rubio tonight, 9 assists, and I think he was a really big difference maker, allowing the game or preventing the game from getting out of hand, where he kind of stabilized the offense and said, like, let's just get some easy shots here instead of panicking. And so when you kind of combine those elements of Rubio playmaking, Ayton finishing, some of the other guys knocking down open threes, and then you add the Booker element, I think, you know, it makes it difficult almost to analyze, because I think we've all noticed that Booker hasn't been incredibly active with or without the ball. Like, it's not even just that he hasn't had the ball playing point guard. It's like just not taking a lot of shots, not really being a focal point, and I think that'll change quickly.
Oh, absolutely. I think it's going to change right away on opening night when Monty said, I think from what Monty said, it's going to be like running through Booker instead of just around him, so to say, with the plays there. And let me ask you as well about Booker. It just seems like defensively tonight was really caught my eye with him. He was very, like, fighting through screens. He was getting in passing lanes. I think we talked about ad nauseum throughout the offseason podcast that this is kind of the year that Booker needs to take the step forward as far as defense goes. Through preseason so far, I think we're kind of seeing that.
Yeah, I think he's played much harder and, I mean, just been more attentive. Like, I think they kind of go hand in hand. Like, if you're not paying attention, then you're not going to be putting in the effort. Like, it's mental and physical energy, I guess, is my point. And I think, you know, as much as we all can point to the fact that he's maybe not an elite athlete and not naturally gifted in some of the ways that, like, you move your body differently playing defense than offense. So it's like, yeah, you can have incredible footwork offensively, get to the basket, you know, drive, create contact, all the things he's so good at. It doesn't necessarily mean that it's just going to translate to defense. He doesn't get over screens well at all. He really struggles doing that. So I think the area where he can overcome those deficiencies is to just spend every ounce of mental energy that he possibly can, and you know, not cross his fingers because he's an athlete. Like, there's ways to impact things without just crossing your fingers, but focus mentally and then, you know, adjust from there. And I think we saw that tonight where he was, you know, Denver's a difficult team to guard, especially because they're so different from the rest of the league, where Nikola Jokic is at the top of the key or the elbow with the ball, and these guys are just running around like chickens with their heads off. And then suddenly they're open. And so you have to be paying attention. It's not unlike what the Warriors do with Draymond Green. You have to pay attention. And at the very least, Booker was doing that. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of times where he got burned. I think that is a very good starting point.
Yeah, it's a good starting point because the first 4 years of his career really wasn't doing much at all on that defensive end there. But let's pivot over to DeAndre Ayton here for a second, Brian, because the first, like, 5 or 6 minutes of this game, I thought we were going to have a really big night from DeAndre Ayton. He only played 17 minutes, I think, because of foul trouble. Of course, we're going to get to that in a second here. But 5 fouls. 4 turnovers, a worst plus minus of minus 21 tonight, 14.79 from the field. Really, he had 8 points in the first 5 minutes of this game, and then the last 10 minutes or so, he only had 6 points in the kind of lackadaisical times. It was kind of one of those Ayton games.
Yeah, I have, I probably have like 3 episodes worth of Ayton thoughts just because of how much we've, I don't know, maybe it was a personal thing of myself building him up too much. Expecting more growth from, because I was pleasantly surprised. I've said this probably 1,000 times on the show at this point, but like the amount of progress he made from the beginning of to the end of last season.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
Like, was a genuine surprise based on what expectation I had as far as how much he could reasonably grow as a rookie. So I think I expected that surprise, like that unexpected level of growth to continue through the summer, and for us to see yet another new version of Ayton right away, and that's probably unrealistic. But he's also the kind of guy that he's not like overly cocky, but he just talks so much about all the different things that he's working on that it can convince you that he should just become, like, he takes a mask off and he's an all-star, you know? So it's tough to kind of balance what he says with how he plays. He hasn't been bad, but he hasn't really taken, at least over the minutes, I think he's played 62 minutes in the preseason. I didn't see the level of just whoa that I was expecting to.
Let me ask you that, because, I mean, obviously his preseason is just a test run. I feel like he was kind of like here and there on some nights in preseason. But would that worry you? Like, if let's say it's November right now and we're like 15 games in the season and he's still having games like this, does that worry you at all? Or do you think you're going to maybe wait a little longer till like maybe the All-Star break and maybe he flips the switch again around like he did that time last year?
I mean, it just depends on when it's a player as important as he is to the trajectory of the whole franchise, you almost have to zoom out. Like,
yeah.
This isn't Norris Odiase, right? I mean, like, I'm not trying to be ridiculous, but it's like, if it was him, I could care less. If the guy takes 3 years to come around, then it's fine. Like, you have a good player after 3 years, and you're totally
he's
happy
first
with
pick
that.
And number one pick in
franchise.
He's
the number
history.
One pick, yeah. And that just has to come with a level of expectation. And so, it just depends. I mean, it's not up to me or you, right? It's how much can the organization stomach to wait. And it's not here yet. It doesn't mean it never will be. But it also, I mean, we talk so much about, like, we can finally see the preseason, or we can finally see basketball once the preseason starts. And I understand not overreacting. I think you shouldn't overreact to positives. But I think reacting properly to negatives is pretty reasonable, because this is a guy who's played with a semblance of the starting lineup that he'll be with on game days against other teams' starting lineups. Like, he's had a pretty reasonable appropriation of a NBA game when he's been on the court. At the end of these games, it gets a little ugly. There's a bunch of guys no one's going to care about once the season starts. But when Ayton's been on the court, it's been pretty close to a real game, and he's definitely not performed at the level we expected, and that has to be worrisome, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with you. It's been like Jekyll and Hyde, so to say, his inconsistency so far from DeAndre, and I think that's going to have to really change ASAP for the Suns team to want to improve this year. But if you want to bounce off Aiden here for a second, I think another player we should hit on as well is Frank Kaminsky, who is just a pleasant surprise to me. I mean, I was the one on the podcast who was kind of just throwing him to the side, like, hey, he's going to be a guy just loses his rotation spot pretty quickly to check Diallo. That's, of course, not going to happen now from what we've seen in four games preseason. 22 points, 6-10 from the field, 2 of 4 from 3, and 8 of 8 from the free throw line in 18 minutes for Kaminsky. 22 points, like I mentioned again. He's been one of the hottest players for the Suns in preseason so far as scoring goes, and I'm just pleasantly surprised by that.
We got all the negatives out of the way with, well, I guess it wasn't negatives with Booker, but plenty of negatives with Ayton. The positive guy, I think, throughout all four games, but especially tonight, was Kaminsky. But why don't we take a break, and then we'll get back to the happiness that we can talk about with this unexpected dude.
Yeah, I know U of A fans might not like it much, but the former Wisconsin Badger is doing very well for himself in preseason so far. But our sponsor today's show is Manscaped. Manscaped is number one in men's below-the-belt grooming. Get 20% off and free shipping with the code LOCKEDON, LOCKEDON, at manscaped.com. That is MANSCAPED.com. All right, Brent, let's go back and talk about Frank Kaminsky because, I mean, if there's an MVP of preseason, quite honestly, I'm shocked I'm saying this, it might be Frank Kaminsky.
Yeah, offensively, I think you really couldn't possibly ask for more. I mean, for him to, you know, he shot the ball incredibly well from three. That you would say that's what you should expect, but at times during his NBA career so far, he hasn't even been able to do that. There's also other guys on this team who we think of as shooters who haven't put the ball in the hole from distance really at all either. So that's coming along. And then to add the free throw attempts, the ability to get to the line tonight where he was posting up on mismatches pretty effectively and not only making shots over the defense, but 8 trips to the free throw line, 6 rebounds, one on the offensive glass, as you kind of ran through with his stat line there. He's chipping in from a whole bunch of different areas, which is the best thing to see because we all know he can shoot. He's probably not worth the money he's making or a roster spot if he's just a big guy who can shoot. That's not really that valuable, but the other stuff he's doing is what's making him stand out.
Yeah, he finished with 3 assists as well and 6 rebounds. Like you mentioned, one on the offensive glass there. And we actually asked Kaminsky post-game just how confident he's playing. He says he's playing very confident now. And maybe the most confident he's played in his entire career, which kind of surprised me just with how he played in Charlotte before. I believe during his rookie season he played pretty well. But overall with Kaminsky, we talked about Dwayne Rankin, I believe, asked him about just his passing, but he didn't know he could pass like he did. Like he had 3 assists tonight at 8 in Portland. He said that one of the main reasons why he chose Phoenix because the system that Monty Williams told him about was there's going to be more emphasis on the big men. He had Kemba Walker in Charlotte, so the ball really never ran through him that much. And he said an emphasis on the big guys getting involved in the passing game really intrigued him, and he wanted to come here and get involved in that aspect. And that's a surprise, I mean, because Kaminsky, from what I remember, Wisconsin, he didn't really do this much either.
Yeah, I mean, really a scorer for them. And, you know, not going to pretend like I followed him closely in Charlotte, but I did watch a lot of last season from him. And yeah, again, really just a finisher, not like a role man, but a finisher as in really just like a catch and shoot 3-point type of player. So, I mean, it's, I guess if it can continue, if that's something that he can continue to show and add a little bit of diversity to what he's able to do on offense, then kudos to the scouting department for finding a player who could fit that we didn't know would, because, you know, it's obvious that those things will happen when Dario Saric has the ball in his hands. That makes a lot of sense. We knew he could do that. But for Kaminsky to be able to slide in and do that as well, I mean, I saw Dario Saric, he was running like mock pick and rolls as the ball handler pregame. So I don't think they'll run the same stuff with Frank, but to your point, that is a way that they want to create mismatches on the court. And if Kaminsky can at least do some of what Dario can do, maybe just from the elbow and the post rather than, you know, operating as a ball handler, still that's going to make the offense a little less easy to predict.
This seems like an easy question for you to answer because I'm right in agreement with what I'm going to say with probably what you're going to say here. But we talked about it throughout leading up to preseason. It'd be a battle probably between Kaminsky and Diallo, probably the most intriguing battle for a 10-man rotation spot. And I think it's pretty easy to say now that Kaminsky pretty handily won this battle.
I would say so. I mean, Diallo really was unimpressive in the few times when, like, I think it was really mostly the the first and second games when he got heavy minutes. I guess the third game as well. Not so much tonight, and I think that says all you need to know. He got about half as many minutes as Kaminsky, and, you know, just hasn't really looked comfortable, to be honest with you. I think he was pretty impressive from what people said at the end of the year for New Orleans, and hasn't even really executed the base level of stuff that you know him to be good at as just kind of an energy big man. He's just been out of position on defense and not really much of an effective role man offensively. So if he's not doing even like kind of what you expect, it's tough to be sold on him too much. The other battle that I think we should talk about is the rookies and Javon Carter as we round out this 10-man rotation. But before we do that, let's shoot to one more break. A reminder real quick, if you are finding us anywhere on the internet, to subscribe to our show, keep up with everything we're doing, getting ready for the season. We'll have guests and everything else to round out this week, and then next week the real regular season starts up. So subscribe, rate, and review the show if you like what you're hearing, and you can keep up with us along the way. So as we get closer to the season, I wonder who's not going to play, because the way that I see it, there's 11 guys, because if we assume that Ty Jerome, like whatever, we'll say we'll have Carter and Jerome just be one spot. Whichever one of those guys is going to win that battle, because that's another one that Monty Williams has talked a lot about. And then we assume the starters, with Šarić being in there normally, whichever wing starts between McHale and Kelly, the other one will be off the bench. We have Kaminsky and Tyler Johnson and Aaron Baines. And that I haven't meant. I've said 10 people now. I've said 11 if you include Javon Carter and Ty Jerome, and I haven't said Cam Johnson. Yeah. So
I think he's earned a rotation spot.
He played 24 minutes today, and he started 3 preseason games. Yeah. It's really tough to imagine that he goes from that and the level of hype and confidence and praise that he was getting from the coaches and teammates to a DNP. Who doesn't play then? I mean, if like we should say Tyler Johnson didn't play because he has a little bit of soreness in the knee that he injured at the end of last year that forced the team to shut him down.
A little worrisome.
Yeah, not a great sign. So maybe if that lingers, maybe he misses opening night and that kind of puts the problem of picking 10 people off. Or maybe they go with 11. Or maybe we're misinterpreting it and one of these guys really is just going to not play. But it's just tough from how they've done the rotation in the preseason to guess who that's going to be.
Yeah, if I had to guess, just if you're using Jerome and Carter as one player, at that point, if Tyler Johnson is fully healthy, here's what I would do. I would do Johnson and then do McHale at the 2, Cam Johnson at the 3, then Kaminsky and Baines. That's what I would do for my second unit right now.
Yeah, so no Ty Jerome or Javon Carter.
If I had to just do 10, that's how I'd do it, just because I feel like...
And that's where I was heading into preseason, but then we had the whole, well, Ty Jerome is suddenly getting all this excitement, so then I like... went the other way where I'm like, okay, well, if he seems like he's going to play.
He was getting hyped up, too, by the team.
Yeah, and Carter, I mean, they've talked about how the backup point guard will be Jerome or Carter, Tyler Johnson being more of a 2. It seems like it's going to be Cam, but that would be crazy to me.
Yeah.
It's interesting, and Monty said pregame that he hasn't decided yet, and he's going to use this week of practice, especially on a couple days he's going to have scrimmages to iron out who plays when and where. I think that includes the starting lineup, but it also includes rounding out this thing. To me, I don't see why you don't just play 11 guys. Yeah. I don't understand really why it has to be 10. That seems like the easiest solution to me.
I agree with you. I would do 11 at this point just because with the way the rotation's setting out. But I think Cam Johnson has earned a spot because his shooting ability, he shot 45% in preseason, on 9 of 20 from 3, 40% career in college, 45% last year too. Like, that shooting is translating immediately. Like, it's no debate on that. And I think that the spacing is definitely needed with a guy like Johnson out there. Even with, if he plays with the starters too, like, he looks good out there with those guys spacing the floor there. And I think at this point, if they had to pick, if we're just doing 10 or even 11, I think the last battle now, in my opinion, is Carter versus Jerome.
Yeah, and they seem to like both of those guys, which is why I'm sort of leaning 11. And the fact that they're so different is what makes it interesting.
Polar opposite.
Yeah, they couldn't be more different. So having, you know, to be able to base it on a matchup or even, you know, if we know that Jerome's going to be so reliant on his offense, if his shot's not falling or if he's turning the ball over and just looks kind of flustered, then you throw Carter out there. And you also have the luxury of a bunch of very talented players in front of them in Booker Rubio and Tyler Johnson.
Yeah.
So you can just bench both of them one night if they're both not playing well. And then just, you know, they have the flexibility. So I that's why I think it's very arbitrary to just say that because Monty said 10 like a week ago that he has to stick with that. Like, of all things, giving more players an opportunity because they played well, it wouldn't ruffle anybody's feathers to say I'm going to reward 11 people rather than 10.
That's
a good thing.
And I think one more position that we should on here, and maybe you can close out with some Rubio thoughts for a second, but we were talking about this during the game, and I think you're on board with this as far as what you believe. I think you believe that Mikhail should start over Kelly Oubre.
Yeah, I mean, it might be the last episode of 7 Seconds or Less, they talked a lot about confirmation bias of all the different analysis that they have of the players through preseason. I worry that that's what it is, but I just, like I was saying to you during the game, if this was a battle and Monty, when he introduced Kelly, kind of basically set the stage for that, not in an aggressive way, but just said, you know, the three spot has not been decided on. And he, at that time, said the four, too, and kind of seems like Dario cemented himself there. But if it was a battle and the preseason was the way to determine who won the battle, then I don't see how it could be anything but Mikhail. I mean, not his best night tonight, like 4 points on 2 of 6 shooting, wasn't, like, really all that impressive on defense, had kind of a weird matchup defending Jeremy Grant, who is a pretty athletic four and pretty big, so not a great player for Mikhail to have to keep up with. But over the course of the 4 games, I think it's pretty clear.
Yeah, I think also it's just a preference, just from the coaching staff standpoint. Do you want just an aggressive scorer out there like Kelly Oubre, who can give you some defense like Mikhail can, or do you want a guy who can space the floor like Mikhail, give you defense, not take many shots away from Booker and Ayton, and even Rubio at that standpoint? I feel like maybe Mikhail does fit better there, but I hate to say it because I just feel like it's kind of just like a minute point, but I feel like $15 million versus $3 million on a contract, I feel like that kind of maybe factors in a little bit.
Yeah, I think it does. I think, unfortunately, like, that stuff has to play a part. But to me, like, the other thing, I mean, maybe as we've talked about all the battles now, and as we kind of close out the show, like, it doesn't have to stay that way. So I think you reward Mikhail, you know, if I'm the coach of the team, which heaven forbid they would be way worse than 19-63, but you reward Mikhail because you set a goal for each of these players to meet. Mikhail met it, but then if he falls off and he's not meeting that expectation anymore, then you can change that, and then Kelly can start. I think the way that they've been so firm about nobody's being gifted anything right now, I think that would align with that perfectly. I mean, we had the whole DeAndre at the four thing. If Ayton isn't effectively doing what you need him to do as a five, then I don't think he wants to play the four. Then it's almost like a punishment. Like, you can move these things around as you see fit. The benefit of having the depth is that you can do stuff like that. So I think Mikhail pretty clearly has won it, but again, Monty said he hasn't decided yet, so maybe there's still more to be seen.
From what we've seen with the rotation so far through 4 games, though, I think it's pretty fair to say that both Oubre and Bruce might get 30-plus minutes per game, but even if one's off the bench.
Yeah, yeah, no, whichever one is coming off the bench will be pretty clearly the sixth man, along with Tyler Johnson, both getting a lot of minutes off the bench. They'll mix and match a lot, so another reason why it's not crucial. Mm-hmm. But I just agree with you that the balance makes a lot more sense with Bridges in the starting lineup and Kelly being able to play his game more off the bench.
Last thing I just want to close on here, unless you want to add anything more, Ricky Rubio, who had 9 assists in 25 minutes tonight, 7 points, 9 assists, 3 steals. I'm just continuing to be so impressed just in person watching him, because he just manipulates the defense so easily for a guy his size, and he's just able to get so many easy buckets for Ayton, Oubre, Bridges. The first 5 or 6 possessions of that game is wide open shots, just courtesy of Rubio. They didn't hit half of those, but just the upgrade from point guard position in the last couple of years, from what we've seen in person, Brandon, just seems like Rubio's is way up as far as what they've had.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I completely agree. The savviest veteran move that he pulled all night was using DeAndre clowning around in the locker room as an opportunity to sneak away from the media. That's like a I've been in the league for 8 years kind of move, far past any of the assists he had tonight. But no, I think his impact, you definitely felt it today. And like I said, stabilize the offense when the game really could have gotten out of hand. I think last year they they're down by 30 in this game.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And so that's exactly the kind of thing you bring Rubio in for. And it doesn't have to show up in the assist column. It did tonight, but you felt him rally them together and just say, like, okay, maybe we're not going to win this game because this team's a lot better than us, but we're definitely not going to be embarrassed.
That's the thing. Like, closing out the show, I just wanted to add this point. Like, this team isn't, like, rolling over, because last year, like, yeah, you mentioned there, they would have lost by 35-40, maybe more than that, to be honest, just from what we've seen in the past with the Phoenix Suns. But they came back late in this game, even though it was reserves. 107-102 is the final score. Anything else you wanted to add on as we wrap up preseason?
No, I'm kind of annoyed that there's so much time between now and the next game.
Yeah, it's
I'm ready for it. But no, we'll have a full week of shows, and then we'll get ready for the game, and then we'll wish that we had a bigger break. So I guess we should cherish the next 9 days.
Yeah, 9 days away is the Sun season opener, October 23rd at Talk Series Arena against the Sacramento Kings. Again, the final score of tonight's preseason finale, 107-102 was the final score. Nuggets beat the Suns, and the Suns are now 2-2 in preseason action as we close out. So thanks again for listening on today's podcast. We'll be back with you guys tomorrow for next episode.